For patients who lose a child, for parents rather who lose a child, the experience is difficult enough without healthcare providers adding to their grief. But according to a new study from Dr. Joanne Cacciatore, a researcher with ASU School of Social Work, many families with children who are dying have negative experiences with their healthcare providers.
That was the case for Maya Thompson. When her son Ronan was 3 years old, she noticed his eye looked a little off, lazy maybe. She took him to an ophthalmologist, but she was told nothing was wrong. But her intuition told her differently, so she kept going. Eventually, they were sent to Phoenix Children's Hospital for an MRI. Doctors found a small mass above his left eye and another in his abdomen.
Ronan was diagnosed with neuroblastoma, a form of childhood cancer. For his mother, the healthcare providers didn't make it easier.
So we were given his diagnosis, and, you know, they want to throw all these statistics and odds at you, like he has a 30% chance of survival. Basically, you have this one treatment that we can do, but, you know, there's no guarantee. Like, basically, I felt like I was playing Russian roulette with his life. Like, they want to kind of guide you, but nobody can give you an answer. So we were having to make kind of all these choices, like almost like blindfolded. We really had to take on a lot of the research ourselves. And they really just kind of throw you into this world where here's the diagnosis and basically good luck.
After multiple surgeries and many rounds of chemotherapy, Ronan died at the age of 4. The show's Lauren Gilger sat down with his mother, Maya, to talk about that experience, and Lauren is here now.
So Maya's experience in the healthcare system with her son as he was dying is likely not out of the ordinary. Throughout all of his treatment, Thompson practically lived in the hospital all day and all night with her son. And I asked her how that changed her life.
I mean, our life completely changed overnight. You know, my son went from being this completely healthy little 3-year-old boy that had never had an ear infection to all of a sudden being diagnosed with cancer. So for him, even, it was like his childhood was just ripped away from him. And for me, it was just, you just kind of do what you have to do. And I worked really hard just to make every day in there as best as I could for him, as far as keeping him entertained and, you know, just trying to make things as magical as possible in a setting like that, which is super challenging. But I mean, we just really took advantage of, you know, like bringing in Nerf guns that he could shoot the nurses with and kind of turning his room into like a Star Wars little play area. And just, I tried my best to kind of make it this little safe fantasy world for us.
One of the things that she found in her new study was that many families reported their chief complaint was that there was sort of a lack of compassion from healthcare providers. Does that surprise you?
Doesn't surprise me because I experienced it. I mean, don't get me wrong, like we had some amazing doctors, and I know there's amazing doctors out there, but the majority of them, they've got a little bit of a God complex. So for instance, when Ronan received part of his treatment in New York City and kind of, you know, we were given like this, basically this one last option that was going to save his life. Mm-hmm. I mean, the doctor put it as we're basically going to throw the kitchen sink at his disease. And this doctor had promised me, like, if you do this treatment with me, like, it's going to work. You know, like, I'm the one that should be treating him. And when it came down to it, we went through this horrific chemotherapy that just completely destroyed his immune system. Like, mm-hmm. We were inpatient for, I think, almost a month in New York. And we had scans and found out that he didn't respond to the treatment. And once we found that out, it was like this doctor just completely dismissed us and just couldn't even look me in the eyes. And basically just, I felt like we were just like kicked out of that hospital, like we were garbage.
Wow. Why do you think that is? Were you surprised by the relationship? Did you expect sort of compassion and humanity from doctors?
I did, because they're dealing with children and this is what they do every single day. And I'm sure I'm not the first parent that this doctor had to tell, you know, that the treatment didn't work and your son's going to die. So I mean, I did expect a little more compassion, and it was really hard not to get that. And just a simple "I'm sorry" would have been great for me.
Right.
You know, I'm not asking for like hugs and tears and all of that, but a simple I'm sorry would have gone a very long way.
Yeah. You mentioned, though, that you did have some really amazing doctors in the process.
We did.
What was the difference?
Oh, my gosh. The difference is they don't look at your child like they're just a number or a statistic. It's coming into a room and kind of forming a relationship with these kids and making them feel like they're special and they matter and you're rooting. They're on their side. They're rooting for them. It's almost like they kind of take you in and make you feel like you're a part of their family and lives and that you matter to them.
So other families obviously are going through this all the time. What would your best advice for them be after having gone through this and dealt with doctor after doctor and hospital after hospital?
You really have to learn to become an advocate for your child and do your research and get second and third opinions on everything. And if you're unhappy with something that's going on in the hospital, you need to voice that just to make sure that, you know, you're being taken care of the way you deserve to be taken care of and your child deserves to be taken care of.
Yeah. Maya Thompson, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
ASU's Dr. Joanne Cacciatore worked with 18 families in similar situations to Maya Thompson. All of them had children with terminal cancer. She looked at their interactions with healthcare providers and found that most of their experiences were negative. Cacciatore is an associate professor in the School of Social Work at ASU, and she's the founder of the MISS Foundation, which provides counseling, advocacy, and research for families experiencing the death of a child. But while families report challenges with healthcare providers in these situations, Cacciatore works with a lot of healthcare providers on just this issue, and she says she doesn't think it's because they don't care. Rather, she thinks it's because they're human.
They want to be present, but they're very frightened. It is scary to be around a child who's dying and their family. A lot of fear can be incited for providers if they have their own children, and if they haven't been trained in traumatic grief. So the lack of compassion was definitely the most salient sort of negative interaction. And yet at the same time, if providers aren't trained, then how do they know how to stay with something that's so terrifying? And so we need more and better training for providers.
Right. And what does that training entail? What does that look like?
Well, I teach a traumatic grief class at Arizona State University. And so we cover a lot of things, some of which really includes mindfulness and self-awareness. And so I really help them focus on their own experiences as we're covering traumatic content and grief content in the course, because so many of them have their own experiences of loss. And so their own sort of experiences come into the classroom. How can it not, when we're talking about something like grief, which is such a common and pervasive human experience? And so I help increase their self-awareness around grief and even around trauma, and it helps them better confront.
What kinds of effects did these families describe from their interactions with physicians?
So what we found was that almost 80% of the families said that the providers who were not compassionate toward them, that they felt that increased their subjective distress. There were problems at the individual level. And then there are structural problems, that is, where the institution itself doesn't allow the provider to deliver nuanced caregiving that is culturally and individually sensitive and appropriate for each family. And so, for example, one family whose son was actively dying in the research said, they called their hospice nurse and said, "Can you come? He's dying." And they said, "Well, our scheduled appointment isn't until tomorrow," or something like that. And the mom said, "He's dying," you know, emphasis added, "he's dying." And so the system itself has to be willing to give in addition to the individual providers as well.
I want to talk a little bit about your story. You do this work for a reason, right? You got into this because of your own experiences.
I did. I lost my fourth child in 1994, and I had a really, let's say, a less than ideal experience at the hospital where my baby daughter died. And I went home without any resources, without a referral. And I was flailing. I got down within 3 months. I weighed barely 90 pounds. And I was having a very difficult time staying here on this planet, despite the fact that I had 3 young children. And I remember thinking to myself, this is crazy. I mean, we have all kinds of programs for all kinds of things. How can there not be some institutional program for parents whose children die?
And so you're obviously doing some of this work, but do you think institutionally it's gotten better since then?
It has gotten better in some ways, and in some ways things haven't changed much at all. I'm pretty consistently discouraged by some of the stories. For example, not very long ago, I met with a bereaved mother whose daughter was killed in a plane crash, and the therapist she went to see, the first one, suggested within 20 minutes that she adopt a child. And I don't think it's that a therapist doesn't care. I mean, people get into therapy because they want to help people. But the reality is that it's the ultimate existential dilemma for the human being to contemplate the death of someone so beloved. And so if that therapist, for example, had a young child at home, imagining, even unconsciously imagining, this could be me, strikes terror in her heart and might incite some type of compelling wish to fix the person. And that's the absolute worst thing that we do. There is no fix. And so the only thing that we can do is hold space for those who suffer this kind of loss. And in so doing, you help them be with what is without needing to change it. And then over time, they learn how to integrate that loss. But in the absence of that kind of support, we add so many layers of complication. And I think we see that in exaggerated mental anguish that goes beyond just the grief. It goes beyond that because there is, in a sense, a protest inside of them to be seen, for their pain to be seen and heard and validated, and it's not getting that.
Yeah. Dr. Joanne Cacciatore is a professor in ASU School of Social Work. Joanne, thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me and for talking about this.